singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love.
It's doubtful that hearing this conjures anything in your mind but the image of Gene Kelly dripping wet and deeply in love, dancing in the street. He was an iconic performer, but he also was co-director of that film, and he spent a lot of time working behind the camera over the course of his glittering career. Gene Kelly would have turned 100 next month, and to mark that occasion, the Film Society of Lincoln Center, with the help of his widow, Patricia Ward Kelly, has put together a retrospective of his work as a dancer, actor, choreographer, and director. Invitation to Dance, Gene Kelly at 100, is a series of 23 films, and it's currently at the Walter Reed Theater on West 65th Street. I'm very pleased that it has brought film historian Patricia Ward Kelly to our show today. Hello.
Hello, and thank you for having me on.
Now, Gene Kelly credited his mother for signing him up for dance lessons when he was growing up in Pittsburgh, but he also said that he tried to get out of the class.
Oh, he hated it. He really abhorred dancing when he was young and would always, he said it taught him a strong right hook because he would get beaten up on his way home in the little East Liberty neighborhood of Pittsburgh. It was a sissy thing to be dancing, so he tried to get out as quickly as he could.
Even though Fred Astaire was already a big star?
Oh, definitely. It definitely still had the stigma. And Gene was not even really aware of Fred Astaire. He didn't even see Fred Astaire until long after he had already developed his own particular style of dance. So
did he think of himself as a dancer first or a
choreographer?
Because he also developed an acting career very early.
Yes, but what he really wanted to be known for was the creative end of it. He wanted to be known for changing the look of dance on film. And so he preferred not to be in front of the camera. He preferred to be behind it. And that was really what he wanted to, in his word, lick. It was CoverGirl that was the real turning point for him when he decided to stay in Hollywood. He originally didn't even intend to stay. He thought he'd come back to the Broadway career. And that's when he said, I'm going to try to figure out this one-eyed monster, the camera, and how you can capture dance.
Had he been an immediate success on Broadway?
Not immediate. In fact, when he went there intending to be a choreographer, and they said, where are you from? And he said, Pittsburgh. And they said, oh, sure. So he got the role in Leave It to Me, and which was the big thing that launched Mary Martin's career, of course. And then the real pivotal role for him, people often speak about Pal Joey, but it was really The Time of Your Life, Bill Saroyan's play, that was where Gene began to understand that you need to use dance to play a role, that you have to carve that out. And that's what he took with him, and that was always in his mind in Hollywood.
Well, many people who can dance learn how to use their bodies in acting. In fact, we see plays often that almost feel like they're choreographed. So was that something that was in the back of his head when he was doing straight acting?
Well, yes, it's funny because people often ask me if Gene ever did any acting. And I always want to say, well, what do you think he's doing up there on the screen, even with singing and dancing? I mean, the Singing in the Rain number, for example, conveys joy around the world. It doesn't need a language. It's understood universally. So I think that there's a misunderstanding that if you're up dancing and using your body to convey something, it isn't acting, and it was.
Now, there are 23 films in this retrospective, but Singing in the Rain isn't one of them.
That's right. Warner Brothers elected to have a big splash for the 60th anniversary of Singing in the Rain and roll it out in 600 different theaters across the country on one single day, and it sold out in all the theaters and was an outstanding thing. So I do kind of forgive them a bit for that, and I think it's they've got an extraordinary run of films in here, some of the lesser known things, and have chosen well.
Like one of the films that you say is really important, but his fans may not remember him for, Xanadu.
Yes, Xanadon't, as they often say.
You said it was the hardest of his movies for you to watch. Why?
Well, it's hard because I met Gene. I wrote a television special for him in 1985, but I Xanadu came out in 1980. So the man I see on the screen there is very much like the man I met. And it's interesting because even the gestures, the way he gets out of a chair, the way he moves so gracefully across the room, the way he nods his tilts his head and the kind of twinkle in his eye and the way he even answers the phone, it's very resonant and reminiscent for me of the Gene Kelly I knew, more than Singing in the Rain, for example.
And he played a character with the same name, Danny McGuire, that he had played in CoverGirl many years earlier.
Right.
Film he co-starred with Rita Hayworth kind of helped put him on the map.
CoverGirl
did he do that on purpose?
Yes, that was kind of a little nod, but CoverGirl was the turning point in his career. That's what really put him on the mark. And it was interesting because from that point on, then MGM refused to loan him out for another studio because they finally began to think he had something. And before that, they just kept putting him in B pictures and kind of throwaway things.
Now, what about Xanadu? It wasn't received all that well. He was a big star. What do you think went wrong?
Well, Xanadu was a disaster. Gene said it was the only picture he'd ever worked on where no one seemed to know what they were doing. The one bright, shining light in it for Gene was Olivia Newton-John. And they had basically a mutual admiration. And I think what's interesting about that film is that you may have seen the number with Gene and Olivia. It wasn't in the original version of the movie. When they previewed it, the audiences came back and said, where's the number with Gene and Olivia? Right. So the producers called Gene. They'd already closed the film, and they called him and asked him to come back and do the number, and he wouldn't take their calls. He was so angry about the misuse and the waste and... Finally, the choreographer, Kenny Ortega, got on the phone and got Gene, and he said, they put you up to this, didn't they? And so Gene went back and created that number. He said, I'll come back on one condition, that it's a closed set and that the producers and the director are not present. Mm-hmm. So that was how that was shot.
But was that disappointment the reason that, despite the fact that it sounds like he was in pretty good health for all the 16 years after, that he didn't direct anymore, didn't act anymore?
He wanted to do several things and tried to work with a lot of... one of the great things he wanted to do was a musical with Michael Jackson. And I think the part of the problem was there was a bit of ageism involved. I think that a lot of, like David Lean and the great director Richard Brooks, that some of the young handlers figured these guys didn't really know what they were doing. And in fact, Gene was consistently way ahead of his time, and it was extraordinary. He wanted to do Frankie and Johnny with Michael Jackson. It would have been amazing, but too many handlers, I think, these days.
I spoke to Robert Wise near the end of his career, and he talked about how difficult it was for him to get a film despite his incredible career. Billy Wilder complained
exactly
the same way. These are some of the giants of film. But Gene could have continued directing, couldn't he?
He could, but I think, again, they think that it's that kind of that story of going in for an audition, tell me what you've done, to Fred Zinnemann. You know, I think they really didn't see these guys as the brilliant and contemporary. See, Gene was so current and always was current. I mean, he would always send me out, if the new list of the top music came out in the LA Times, he would say, go out and get me copies of all this. I want to listen to it, because he knew that the music preceded the dance. And so it might not be his cup of tea, but he was still current. But I think people saw a lot of these old guys as dinosaurs instead of really hot.
Well, you had to admire the way Michael Jackson danced.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure
Gene,
he did.
Gene loved him. He said he was like an electric eel. And we went to dinner with Michael when we were talking about this project, and it was amazing because Michael stood up at the table and had memorized all of Gene's work, mm-hmm. and had memorized really obscure television specials. He did Ball in the Jack, and he canted his hat, and Gene was next to me, and he stood up and did the numbers he envisioned in this musical. It was like this extraordinary challenge dance between these two guys, and I wish I had that on film.
It's likely you've seen Gene Kelly tap dance his way through a scene in front of the camera, but today I'm talking with his widow, film historian Patricia Ward Kelly, about his influence behind the camera as well. She has collaborated with the Film Society of Lincoln Center to put together a 23-film retrospective called Invitation to Dance, Gene Kelly at 100, which is on right now and will be running through July 26th at the Walter Reed Theater on West 65th Street. You say that he was unaware of Fred Astaire for a while, but his style is quite different, and even the way he was filmed. Fred Astaire insisted on long takes with full body all the time.
So did Gene.
but their dance sequences don't look the same.
Well, it's interesting because they're always being compared, and Gene said it's like comparing apples and oranges. And what's interesting is that Astaire is glorious, but he was continuing a European style of dance, a European tradition. And Gene, after coming out of the Depression and his father losing a job and Gene really experiencing the hardship of that, said, I don't want to dance like rich people on polished floors. I want to create a particularly American style of dance.
And so he dressed differently.
Well, yes, and it's very conscious.
And he also made films with some of the great black tap dancers. I think
brother.
Of Gene Kelly in two ways, as the guy who did An American in Paris on the one hand, and somebody who liked to dance with the Nicholas Brothers.
Well, it's interesting because I think that's one of the things that gets a little bit lost, too, is the breadth of his style of dancing, because he was a classically trained ballet dancer. He was trained by a Spanish dancer, in fact, the same Spanish dancer, Angel Cancino, who trained Rita Moreno and just happened to be Rita Hayworth's uncle. He was a gymnast, an acrobat. He knew the trapeze. He could walk a tightrope. He studied all of the forms of dance because he felt that you needed to use a particular form to convey what that character was doing.
Now, how did he come to direct? He often co-directed, but he did direct some films completely by himself.
Well, and it's important, I think, and again, IMDb unfortunately lists directors alphabetically and won't list them in the correct order. Gene is the first director on all of the pictures with Stanley Donen. It's not the other way around, and it's a very, very important distinction. And I think that Gene always wanted to direct his own work and choreograph his own work. It was just that it took time for the studios to begin to understand that he could do that. And On the Town was the breakthrough thing.
The film that he co-starred with Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
And Stanley Donen directed. Now, so was it that he felt that he needed another eye while he
yes.
was being filmed? Because that is a problem for some people who direct themselves.
And especially, I think, for the kind of precision that was required for the dance. And Gene had three people behind the camera. He not only had Stanley Donen, but he had Carol Haney and Jeannie Coyne. And so each was responsible for watching, make sure Gene hit his marks, make sure his face was in the right, you know, his smile was right. And it was particularly important in something like Cover Girl, where this just incredible precision where he was dancing with himself.
Well, Donen was a pretty great director in his own right, but their relationship became strained after some years.
That's actually not true either.
Oh, I heard because they married the same woman.
No, that's not true either. But Gene would put that in the errata category. Like, there's no milk in the water in Singing in the Rain. We can stop a couple of those things. But no, it's really, that's gotten out into print in this big disintegration after It's Always Fair Weather. And it's just, I have no indication of any of that. I've loved letters from Stanley Donen in the archives that saying that he owed Gene his career and loved him very much.
In 2008, the New York Times published a letter that you wrote in response to a Maureen Dowd column that linked George W. Bush to Gene Kelly.
She was, you know, it's funny because I got a lovely letter from her afterward. I responded very quickly, and I owe her immensely because it was like she set up a perfect volleyball shot for me over the net, because I knew she didn't really mean to denigrate Gene, but to put link Gene, and the headline was I knew Gene Kelly, and the, you know, the president is no Gene Kelly. And what was interesting about it was that I talked about Gene as a guy who read a book a day, who did the New York Times crossword in ink, who spoke Latin and Yiddish and Italian and French. And I got so much mail from people saying, well, I never knew that about him. I never knew about him. And that's one of the reasons I created these two shows that I'm doing at Lincoln Center on Friday and Saturday.
Well, the one you'll be hosting, An Evening with Gene Kelly, breaks slightly from the repertory screenings. What will you be showing?
Well, and it's actually kind of a one-woman show. It's a theatrical piece where I combine film clips and the stories. I was fortunate to interview Gene and record his words over a decade, almost every day. And it's really a man people don't know. And the insights about why he was motivated to create things and how he did it. And so it's a very intimate evening. It's very personal. And I try to take people in and make them feel like we're in a living room chatting. And the next night is a very distinct, it's another one-woman show, and it focuses on his innovations in changing the look of dance.
And Patricia Ward Kelly will be speaking at the Walter Reed Theater on West 65th Street tomorrow at 7 o'clock and then Saturday at 6:30. For more information or tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. He danced with many partners, many wonderful partners, but we're going to go out with some music in which he danced with a mouse. That must have been complicated, doing something where your partner is animated.
Well, and he always said that his favorite dance partner was Jerry the Mouse because he showed up on time and he worked his little tail off. But the camera operator...
And he always lip-synced correctly.
And the camera operator got an ulcer shooting this. It was one of the most difficult things Gene ever did. So.
Thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you for having me. A delight.